following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. Here are your hosts, Olivia Reiner and Tom Silverstein. Welcome, everyone, to the JS Online Packers News Green 19 podcast alongside Tom Silverstein. I am Olivia Reiner. Tom is back, everyone. Welcome back to the party, Tom. We missed you.
Oh, it was really hard to be away on vacation and enjoying myself and not doing anything.
We missed you dearly, and we're very appreciative to Ryan Wood for stepping in and doing some chatting with me in the meantime. It's not the end of Ryan. We'll get Ryan back on the pod and have some more conversations with him. However, really nice to see you once again, Tom. Any highlights from your quote-unquote break, which is not over yet?
No. My highlight has been my successful trend in softball and Little League. So we're a combined 16-1 between my two teams. So
Ooh, look at you. A real athlete. What position do you play on your
softball? I am the pitcher in softball, and I'm the head coach in Little League. And I am the worst hitter you've ever seen in your life, but I'm able to play on this really good team because I can pitch. Otherwise, I would be on the bench. So it's a lot of fun. Really a lot of fun. We've been together for like 20 years, the group. And so it is a nice way to relax. You know, you don't get to do that stuff during the season. It's 24/7 during the season. So it's got to take advantage of it when you got it.
What kind of coach is Coach Silverstein? What do the kids call you?
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm Coach Tom. And I'm very laid back. I'm not the yeller, screamer type. I tend to be a little too complicated, like with my stuff, given the ages of the kids. But mostly it's just fun. I always loved baseball. Baseball was my first love. And so it's really fun to kind of coach these young kids. It's just a blast.
Congrats on all of your success so far. I hope it carries into the summer and beyond. I'm sure it will, knowing you.
Me too. Thank you.
All right, let's get into some Packers related news. Mini camp wrapped up yesterday being Thursday, June 10th. Always got to check the date on my calendar.
I know.
It's like, what is time? Regardless, the Packers are 3 weeks into phase three of the offseason program. There is one more week left of OTAs next week, so we will have one more practice to view open to the media before training camp. It has been nice to see the team running around out there, getting to see some of the unfamiliar faces, some familiar faces, and just start to get an understanding of where this team is at right now at this point in the offseason heading into training camp, especially without quarterback Aaron Rodgers. That being said, Tom, we're not seeing football as we know it, right? We're not seeing football being played in pads, full contact, a dominant, impressive, full speed pass rush, right? This is a modified version of football that we see at minicamp. What can be gleaned from these past 3 days that would be relevant going into training camp in the regular season?
So the things I look at when I watch a practice like that, start in the trenches, all I look for is who is playing what position, because you can't really tell anything about blocking without pads and, you know, who looks like he's a left tackle and who looks like he's a center and all of that. I just try to keep track of who is playing where. And the Packers tend to move a lot of guys around, so it is pretty interesting. We can get into that. I have my notebook with some of the combinations they use, but we can get into that later. The other thing I look at is skill positions. That's the one place where you can tell something, mostly wide receiver and tight end, because you can see natural catches and ability, speed. You can see that at the corner position too. I think that's really about it, because so much of football is related to contact, and there's no contact in this, you know, in these practices. So that's kind of what I watch for.
What about Jordan Love? He has been obviously a huge topic of conversation this offseason, with Aaron Rodgers away from the facility, sitting out, hasn't been present at OTAs or minicamp. This is our first time to get a real good look at Jordan Love. And by a good look, I mean seeing him take most of the snaps in practice, because that's not what he got to do behind Aaron Rodgers. What we've seen of Jordan Love on Tuesday, I was not at practice, neither were you, Tom. So, but what we heard was that wasn't such a hot day for him. Wednesday was a better day for Jordan Love. He connected on some deep balls, successful 2-minute drill. Yesterday was, you know, fine. I would say it was pretty middle of the road. Defense had a pretty strong day, offensive line and blocking tight ends up front, maybe missed some assignments and allowed the pass rush to have a pretty successful day, forcing Jordan Love out of the pocket and to throw on the move. That was like the bare bones assessment of 3 days of mini camp. What do you make of that as it relates to Jordan Love and his development and his preparedness for week one of the regular season if the Packers need him to start?
I think it was that the one thing that we saw was typical of what a young quarterback does. There's going to be days when he really stinks, and there's going to be days when he's really good, and then there's all those days in between. And I thought the third day was the in-between day. And what I just wanted to see was how quickly he made his decisions, what happened when the receiver he didn't want wasn't available. You know, there were some blocking breakdowns I saw that caused him to do things that, you know, are not in the script. So, you know, like the interception he threw to Eric Stokes that was would have been returned for a touchdown. There was a total breakdown up front, and there was a guy right in his face, and he just threw it out there. In a game, I don't think he would have made that throw.
It was probably a sack.
Yeah, he probably would have been sacked. And then, you know, he's just trying to keep it going. But what I thought I saw, you know, was just some confidence. He looked like he knew what he was doing. The huddle, you know, broke well. He looked like he was good at using his hard count. He had a couple of snap mistakes, you know, where there was a fumbled snap or fumbled handoff, and that's stuff that I think he's going to have to continue to work on. But, you know, his fundamentals look good. His arm looked good. You can see what they saw in him, basically. It's just now what happens when you throw in the complex defenses and the pass rush and, you know, the matchups and who to pick, you know, where. And I think that we'll see when training camp comes around. But to me, he passed the mini camp test. And, you know, it's not the final exam, but it is one test along the way.
Right. At this point, we're looking to see some semblance of composure, given whatever is being thrown at him. And then heading into training camp, Tom, what are you going to start to focus in on more when it comes to Jordan Love?
Well, then when camp starts, he's got to move the ball. The offense has to move. And, you know, he's got to be good in the 2-minute drill. He's got to be accurate when he's got to throw, you know, tight coverage. He's got to make the right decisions. I mean, once camp starts, and let's just say that he's the starting quarterback, then all the excuses are done. Then it's, you got to perform. And every time he has a bad practice, that's a step backward. So the expectation just rises with each practice as they get closer to a game. And so the big thing is you want to see him have production. And then you want to see that in the preseason games. Now, if Rodgers is there, everything changes, but you still want to see that progression because there's no guarantee that he won't play this year if he's the backup quarterback, and he is going to be the backup if Rodgers is here. So regardless of what happens, his progress will be measured in training camp from the minute he steps on the field.
Matt LaFleur was adamant that they want Aaron Rodgers present for the offseason program. No doubt about that. However, it must be nice to finally get Jordan Love some real snaps, taking the majority of the snaps in these practices so he can finally start to feel what it's like to be in command of this offense. He didn't have nearly this much experience this past season behind Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers staying away helps the development of Jordan Love.
Yeah, that's a great point. It, you know, if everything was okay with Rodgers, and I'm LaFleur, I might have had him skip the mini camp anyways, just to give Love some time to practice with the veterans. You know, Rodgers doesn't need a whole lot of that. He'll get all of that he needs in training camp if he's here. I think that was probably the best thing that could happen for the team, was for Rodgers not to be there, because now they get a sense of who Jordan Love is. He has to be the leader while he's there. He has to be in command of the offense, and everybody gets to know him, and he gets to know, you know, get some really quality practice time. So I think from that standpoint, it worked out great for LaFleur and the rest of the team. Then we'll just see what happens once training camp. And I don't think any of us know what's going to happen. I will say that, you know, you can always tell something from the external voices coming from Rodgers camp, and you're starting to hear, you know, the James Joneses say there, oh, well, there's a chance he'll come back, you know, and the more we keep hearing that, I want to see how that goes. But the more we keep hearing that, the more that tells me that there is a pretty, you know, there's a decent chance he will be here come training camp. I just don't think those voices, go independently. I think they're connected to Rodgers.
Everyone wants answers, Tom. I think we would all like some more answers. However, we're probably not going to get those answers anytime soon. So we will continue to stay glued to social media and to the people that have been somewhat speaking for Aaron Rodgers himself when Rodgers himself hasn't been speaking as we head into training camp. You did a really great job writing one of your columns recently about some of the scenarios that the Packers may currently be working through when it comes to compensation for Aaron Rodgers. If the Packers were to opt to pay Rodgers more money and how that might pan out. And I just, the sheer amount of like math that went into that article, I had to reread that parts of it to me. I'm like, is this in English? But no, it was a really well done story. And it just shows that I think it's very easy to brush aside the cap and say, the cap isn't real. Look at all these teams that sign players for tons and tons of money, and can like look at Kansas City and all the players that they've signed to these very impressive players, very talented players, to monster contracts and have made it work for their team. But at some point in the future, they're going to have to pay the price for it. And the Packers are going to be asking themselves this question right now. If we decide, if Rodgers, if that is what he wants, if he wants more money, can we afford it? Is it worth mortgaging the future for a new contract for our quarterback who's 37 years old?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And thanks for the compliment. It was one of the hardest stories I've ever written, because, you know, 30 years into this, I have an understanding of the cap, but, you know, limited. And so the average reader is not going to understand, or it's hard to understand the math. And I was thankful I had an agent who's negotiated blockbuster quarterback deals to help me and walk me through it. And there were things that I would have never even thought of. So that really helped. And it made me understand that these are the issues the Packers are going to face. And what we came up with was that if he wants to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, and he wants all that money guaranteed over, let's just say, the remaining three years of his contract, that will completely collapse the Packers' salary structure. I mean, they could have a salary cap hit of $70 million in 2024, counting towards Rodgers, who is no longer on the roster. So they have to make a decision. When does that number, when does that money that will be on the cap after he leaves become too great that it would require them to just slash payroll and become, the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Jets or whatever. And so that's the big decision. And the agent said in that, he said, the thing the Packers have to do is stop it from getting to 40 million. And if they can get it to 30 million, they can live with that. 3 years guaranteed at 30 million, they could probably live with that. But if it starts getting to where he wants to be up near Patrick Mahomes, then they have to seriously think about trading him.
I won't go too much into the cap information that you have in your story. If you're interested, I'll make sure to reshare this article on social media so you all can go back and take a look. And if you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend taking some time to look at the numbers and try to make some sense out of them for yourselves. But I wanted to go back. I did a podcast yesterday with Mike Jones of USA Today, our sister national paper, if you will, owned by Gannett.
Mike is a great guy.
And Mike is awesome. And we talked a little bit about, actually, we talked a lot of bit about Aaron Rodgers. So if you want to go listen to that, I also tweeted that link out. But one of the questions that I appreciated that Mike asked was about Aaron Rodgers' interview with Kenny Mayne on SportsCenter several weeks ago. And Mike asked me if you had an opportunity to sit down with Aaron and ask him a follow-up, or if you were hosting SportsCenter and had the opportunity to ask him another question, what question would you ask? And immediately my question was, well, what does Aaron Rodgers want? Because he hasn't been explicit in like, okay, this is what I am looking for. This is what it would take for me to return to the Packers.
Right.
So I would like that question answered. But if I had more of a conceptual question, not for Aaron Rodgers, but for Brian Gutekunst or Mark Murphy, I would ask them, what do you owe Aaron Rodgers? What does Aaron Rodgers deserve? Because Rodgers can want, X, Y, and Z. He can want the kitchen sink, and that's fine. He can request whatever he wants, right? But in turn, what do the Packers owe him? And I think you did a very good job of breaking this down and kind of trying to answer that question. What can the Packers afford to give him that makes sense for the team and for their future post Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yes.
Because that is the more difficult question to ask in all of this.
I think you hit the nail on the head. That is the question that we'd all want to ask him. And to me, the follow-up is, it's exactly what you're saying, but what specifically would it take? And what is at the heart of this? I think it would take some pretty in-depth interviewing to really get at the heart of involved in this dispute, because I don't think it's singular. I think there's multiple aspects to it. I'm not sure how deep we would get to it, but I would want to know also, are you okay with being traded? Should they just trade you? Would that solve the whole thing? And why don't you demand a trade if you don't want to be here? So that would be kind of along the lines that I would ask. But I also think your idea of talking to the Packers brass is good too. And they've not been faultless through this. And I think would be good. I don't think they've had the sense to get out there and really play damage control and really say, you know what? We did screw up by not telling him we were taking Jordan Love. You know, this is what happened. We tried to trade up. We couldn't get the wide receivers we wanted. And we took the quarterback because he was the best guy out there. We should have called you immediately after that. That was a dumb thing to do. And, you know, you don't have to apologize, but you have to admit your mistake. After that, to me, I don't know what the other disputes are, but I don't think they have to apologize for cutting Jordy Nelson or cutting Jake Kumerow. But let's get at the heart of that first. And if this is what I would be saying if I'm at the Packers. Let's get at the heart of that and then see if we can, if that can open the door and moves, get this thing moving. Because, and then you need to do it publicly. It's okay to admit you made a mistake. I don't think there's a problem with that. And once again, I've never been a fan. I've made that very clear that I'm not a fan of the front office structure. And it makes me wonder whether the communication there is screwed up, whether there's a problem of who's really in charge and how this is going. So again, the Packers are not faultless.
Pertaining to the draft pick last year of Jordan Love, it just seems like there was some lack of transparency. I think transparency seems to be at the heart of it. And it's interesting, Tom, that you say that the front office should be transparent with the public and not just with Rodgers. Because I would like to think that at this point, Gutekunst or Murphy, whoever in the front office, has probably said to Rodgers in their trips out west, they've probably been more transparent about what went down on that night. But with us, they haven't been so transparent. With the public, they haven't been so transparent. And Mark Murphy said in his monthly column on his website, he said the notorious comment that this debacle has divided the fan base, which some people seem to disagree with or take offense with, which is a whole other conversation. But he also added that the less the two sides say publicly, the better for everyone. And I'm just wondering, who is this better for to say less publicly? And to me, it seems like it's trying to preserve some sort of image on both sides.
Yeah, you know, so if I'm the front office, I would have gotten ahead of this a long time ago. You know, okay, let's say they get to the draft part where he says he doesn't want to play. I would have had Brian Gutekunst or Murphy made available to do one-on-ones with local media to explain how they could have handled things better. And that Aaron Rodgers is their quarterback for now and as long as he continues to perform, and that the communication with him could have been better, and talk about, get it publicly out there that, okay, we screwed this up, but this is our expectation for the future. We're not guaranteeing that Aaron Rodgers will be our quarterback for 3 years, but put out the scenario that, you know, as long as he keeps being Aaron Rodgers, he's their quarterback. I don't see what's wrong with saying that and saying it publicly. And if something happens or something changes, then people will understand. But gosh, you know, I understand what he's saying, like, let's not negotiate this publicly, but there's nothing wrong with the Packers coming out and, you know, taking a high road on this. As much, let's face it, Aaron Rodgers is not easy to deal with. He is not, without his strong opinions and influence and wants and, you know, I'm sure he's a pain to them at times, but there's certain concessions you have to make and admit you made a mistake, and then you're on the high road. And then if Rodgers can't accept that, then I think the public swings your way. You know, I think the public goes, hey, they apologized. They admitted their mistake. They admitted it publicly, and they're moving on, and they've laid out what their whole plan is. So if he's still mad after that, then that's on him. And I think they've screwed that up pretty badly.
To just be completely clear here, the mistake isn't Jordan Love. Jordan Love is not the mistake. It is too early to call Jordan Love a mistake, a success, either way. The mistake is the process. The mistake is the way that it happened and the communication that happened or didn't happen. Right. On that draft night. So yeah, I think transparency, honesty is always helpful. And by talking, by getting the story out there, perhaps a little less dividing happens. What you didn't want to happen, which is currently happening, perhaps you're able to get in front of it and avoid some of the dividing. I don't know.
Yeah. Just some thoughts. And I can't say this for sure, but I know where I know what I've seen of Aaron Rodgers over the years and what he reacts to and what he doesn't. And a public acknowledgement of it, to me, is going to be way more validating to him than it is a face-to-face. Like, go ahead and, you know, it's probably okay for him, you know, oh, great, thanks for admitting you made a mistake. But I think it's public here. You know, we made a mistake. We value this guy. I think that would be more appealing to him than it would be a one-on-one discussion. And we still really haven't seen that at all.
It's a good question. And I really didn't anticipate sitting here, Tom, and talking to you about Aaron Rodgers again for like 20 minutes. But I'm glad we did, because even though there's been no news necessarily, just some thoughts, things that, you know, as time passes, I start to get more clarity on certain things that I've discussed and thought about already. So
yeah,
I wanted to let's talk about some other things. Let's go back to minicamp for a little bit and talk about the Packers' most recent addition. They added inside linebacker Devondre Campbell to the room, which brings them some more depth and also some veteran presence, considering right now the top two inside linebackers in that room are Kamal Martin and Chris Barnes, who one of them was a draft pick in 2020, the other one an undrafted free agent signed in 2020. So if you look at Devondre Campbell, he's been in the league for 5 years and he started 70 of 75 games. So pretty clear starter. And then you look at just the way that his snaps have broken down in his career. Looking at this past year specifically with the Cardinals, Pro Football Focus says that he took 880 snaps, defensive snaps in 2020. 349 of those snaps were run defense snaps, 476 of them were coverage snaps. So clearly, you know, has a little bit more experience in coverage, which should be a nice compliment to players like Chris Barnes and Kamal Martin, who most of their snaps are run defense.
Yeah, I mean, he's a starting linebacker and he stays on the field for all three downs, and his snaps are probably more reflective of how much teams pass than they do run. There's probably a little bit more where they might not have played him on first down. I'm not really sure, but when I saw the signing, my first reaction was, okay, this is like a Christian Kirksey signing, and they just got a guy who can cover, and he might be at the end of his career, he might not. But then I called a personnel person that I really respect who had studied him, and he gave him a pretty good review. I mean, I thought, oh, this is just a throwaway guy. And what I'll read what he said. He said that he's a really good cover guy. He's a big guy, 6'4", 232. He's more of a finesse player, which is like Christian Kirksey. but he has a really good natural feel and coverage. He plays zone really well. He can cover the tight end. He's been extremely durable and he's a good player. So I think that's a great addition for them. That could be a really good addition with the combination of Barnes and Martin. Barnes and Martin are probably, they could probably be the starters, or you could start Campbell and in certain situations bring Barnes in. You know, so let's say it's Martin and Campbell, then you bring Barnes in on early downs to, you know, on a, or against a run, a team that likes to run the ball a lot. If there's a team that throws to its backs a lot or its tight ends a lot, then you have Campbell on the field a lot. But I think they could rotate those three guys and get a lot out of them. I think that's a quality signing if he's as good as the scout said he is.
Not only can we look to his previous starts to see this as an indicator that the Packers anticipate him being a starter, Tom, you also reported on the contract details for Campbell as well. And it's a 1-year, $2 million deal that includes a $1 million signing bonus and an additional $500,000 in playtime incentives if he hits those thresholds.
Right.
So to me, that's also, it's an indicator that they expect him to start or play at the very least, or make the 53.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely slotted for the 53. So I totally expect him to be on the team. And I would not be surprised if he's starting and, or at least playing, you know, second, third downs. So they needed some experience in the middle and he gives them that. And I think he's a better player than Christian Kirksey. And the durability issue is huge because, you know, we all knew Kirksey came in with a injury history. He barely played in 2 years. And of course he got hurt. And this guy has been a starter for 5 years. And I think he's missed like one or two games. And so they get a guy who they know will be on the field. So I think this is a kind of quality. If he turns out to be what, you know, the scout said he was, then that's the kind of veteran signing that can get you to Super Bowls when you can add a guy who's really talented or let me back that up, who fits a need that you have and has the talents for the defense that you're about, you know, that you're going to play.
Speaking of the defense that the Packers are going to play, we got to see the Packers practice over the last 3 weeks, and we got to see Joe Barry interact with the Packers defensive players for the first time ever. So that was cool to see somebody, you know, different out there and kind of compare his more hands-on approach to Mike Pettine's approach, which was certainly a little bit less hands-on. That being said, it's hard right now at this point in the offseason to really get a sense of the differences between Joe Barry's defense and Mike Pettine's defense.
Yeah.
Truthfully, they looked pretty similar to me. It's still very early, but that being said, that might also be part of the deal here. I don't think Joe Barry and his defense are going to be that markedly different from Mike Pettine and his defensive scheme.
I think the philosophy is going to be different. So, and by the, what I mean is, I mean, not necessarily the structure, but the philosophy of how they use the guys they have on the field. So you will, when I was watching it, it looked like I was watching Patton's defense. They play the same nickel, you know, Chandon Sullivan was the nickel, King and Alexander, the outside corners, had the two safeties back, had two inside linebackers. I mean, there was nothing there that said to me, wow, this is really different. And what is going to be the difference, I think, is the amount of blitzing. I don't think they'll blitz as much as Pettine did. I don't think they'll be quite as complicated in the secondary. I think they'll, you know, part of what's supposed to make this defense tough is that they'll play zone on one side and man on the other and mix that up and disguise it really well, but they're not a big pressure defense like Pettine's is. And they'll play a little bit more to stop the run than they will to get upfield. That's where I think we'll see the differences. Just on the surface, if you would have put taken Joe Barry off the field, I would have thought that Mike Pettine was still here. So, we'll see when training camp rolls around and they start working on things that we haven't seen. But I'm not expecting big, complicated things. I think this is a defense that is built on being structurally sound. And so you won't see a lot of flash out of it.
I will be interested to see how much they take what the Rams did in the secondary. The Rams played a lot of man with on the side that Jalen Ramsey was lined up. Is Jair Alexander going to be the equivalent of Jalen Ramsey in this Packers defense? Or do they see this working better a different way?
Right.
So is it going to be a carbon copy of what the Rams did this past year under Brandon Staley, or is it going to be some iteration of that? And most likely it'll be some iteration of that because it's a different team. It's a different defense, different players, different strengths. It'll be really cool to see how it fits in Green Bay.
Yeah. If Joe Barry is a really good defensive coordinator, then it won't look exactly like the Rams because the Packers don't have the same talent as the Rams. I mean, it's a different talent, not the talent level, but the actual players. The Packers are really strong at the outside linebacker position, and they get a lot of pass rush out of those guys. The Rams got a lot of their pass rush out of Aaron Donald up the middle. That's where it created everything. So it's different, and he's got to adapt to the talent that the Packers have.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Tom, it's been wonderful having you back. I miss you dearly. Is there anything else you wanted to go over with the people before we wrap things up for today?
I would say, I'm trying to think of what I saw on the field that was interesting. One thing I did notice was special teams. I just kind of kept an eye on all the coaching that was going on, and it is different. I can't tell you exactly what's different, but some of the formations I saw were different. Like their punt formation looked a little bit different. Some of the drills they were doing were different. So I'm really interested to see what Maurice Drayton brings to the special teams. And of course you can't tell anything until they actually get in the preseason game. But it looked to me like they're doing things differently. So this isn't just a carbon copy, even though he was the assistant last year. So that'll be something to watch when we get to camp too.
Yeah, it'll be cool to see who ends up being the return specialist as well. Now that Tyler Irvin is out, he was the Packers' primary return specialist last year. And Amari Rodgers has been highly touted as a return specialist and his ability to do so at Clemson. So will be interesting to see if they end up using him. I know the Packers added wide receiver DeAndre Tompkins. He's been taking some reps there as the return specialist as well during those special teams periods. Who else do they have back there? Josh Jackson too. That's not new. He's been on the depth chart as well as their return specialist. And I think there might've been a fourth player too, a mix of players. They certainly could use some explosive talent at that position. They could use some explosive talent everywhere when it comes to the special teams unit as a whole, but something to keep an eye on.
Keeping an eye on Amari Rodgers will be something we will be doing during training camp, because I think that's a guy who could add something right away. As long as he's catching the ball, his hands are good. I saw him make a one-handed catch in the end zone in a drill. He's going to be fun to watch to see how they use him. The other thing, special teams was, I watched a little bit of Ryan Winslow, who's their other punter, and boy, the ball flies off his foot. It reminds me a lot of what J.K. Scott is when he's at his best. And who knows if he's consistent enough, but boy, would it be fun to watch a good punting battle. And maybe I'm just a football nerd and that would be fun to watch a punting battle. But, those things are intense because every kick matters. And maybe we will have a little bit of a competition Ooh. There.
Malik Taylor was the fourth punt returner, by the way, yesterday. Okay. To the people of the podcast, longtime listeners know the fun fact about Ryan Winslow, Tom, you remember?
You went to high school with them or something like that?
I went to middle school with Ryan.
Middle school, that's it.
So fun facts, always the fun fact. Queen here. Yes, I'm curious to see how that shakes out. There's technically a positional battle at every specialist position when it comes to kicker as well. JJ Molson is giving Mason Crosby a run for his money. And I think we got to see the new long snapper yesterday too. Joe Fortunato was snapping to J.K. Scott and Ryan Winslow yesterday.
It's going to be tough to unseat Mason Crosby. I mean, he just was like a machine in practice. The only kick he missed was from 55 yards out. I mean, he was just bam, 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 right down the middle. Talk about consistency. They are really lucky to have a guy like that.
I feel like JJ Molson is just like got such an interesting backstory with his family lineage with the Montreal Canadiens. Absolutely. And the beer and all that. I love a good story. But yeah, it's gonna be real tough to try to unseat Mason Crosby. But yeah, in terms of punter, long snapper, we'll see how that goes. So a little special teams update for all of you to close things out. Now that I think we've run through just about everything, Tom, we good to wrap things up?
We're good.
All right. I'm not sure what our plans are now for next week, but the Packers have one more week left of OTAs, one more session open to the media. I might be the only one there. I'm not sure who else is showing up. So
yeah. And then we'll take a little break until training camp starts. Or something big happens with Rodgers.
I feel like that could come first. So it could. We'll be back hopefully at some point to chat with all of you before training camp starts. And yeah, it feels weird to say goodbye, but I guess we'll say goodbye for now, not forever. And thank you so much for listening. As always, subscribe to us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Make sure you're checking out PackersNews.com for all of your Packers coverage. As I said, it's the off season, but the stories continue. So we'll keep you updated over there for all of your latest breaking Packers news. For Tom Silverstein, I am Olivia Reiner. We'll chat with you next time.